Hello and welcome to the Leicester Mercury Talking Newspaper for Thursday, November the 29th, Friday, November the 30th and Saturday, December the 1st. It is produced by Vista, telephone number 0116 249 8839. Items are selected and read by Sally and Bev and it is recorded by Dave. Sunrise and sunset times for the week commencing the 2nd of December are sunrise 7:54 a.m, sunset 3:54 p.m. And we begin with Thursday's headline, Royals Pay Respects. The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge have praised the people of Leicester for the warmth and compassion they have shown since the death of Vijay Srivaddhanaprabha. 1 month on from the helicopter crash that claimed the life of the Thai Leicester City owner, the royal couple visited the King Power Stadium to meet relatives of Khun Vichai and the others who died in the tragedy. Leicester City Chairman Vijay Srivaddhanaprabha, two members of his staff, Kaveporn Punpare and Nusara Suknamai, pilot Eric Swaffer and his partner Isabella Rosa Lekovic died in the tragedy. Yesterday morning, Khun Vichai's son, Ayawat, was the first to greet his friend Prince William and Catherine, only yards from the scene of the crash, which has now been transformed into a vast field of floral tributes. Fans who had volunteered to move the huge number of tributes from the front of the stadium to the car park where the helicopter fell were invited to come and meet the royals. After speaking at length with manager Claude Puel and senior first-team players, including Casper Schmeichel, Harry Maguire, Jamie Vardy and Wes Morgan, the Duke and Duchess took time to thank the fans. Season ticket holder Paul Groves, 67, from Narborough, chatted with the couple. He said, "I told them what a great owner we had and how much confidence we have in Top to build on his father's legacy. They shook my hand. It was lovely. My wife Mary will be so jealous. It's great that they came." The visit was announced by Kensington Palace last week. In a tweet, the palace said, "Their Royal Highnesses knew the club's chairman and wanted to visit the city to recognise the warmth and compassion that the people of Leicester and fans of at LCFC have shown in reaction to the accident." The couple visited the tribute site before meeting volunteers at King Power Stadium. They then visited the University of Leicester, where they met members of the public, students and representatives from two university community projects with links to Leicester City Football Club.
Food Bank's urgent plea for help in the season of goodwill. A Leicester food bank is launching an urgent appeal for help as it battles to keep up the demand in the run-up to Christmas. The Braunston Food Share Project, run by community business Be Inspired, normally provides food and essentials for 70 families a week on the Braunston estate and in adjoining postcode districts. However, in the weeks leading up to Christmas, Be Inspired expects that figure to rise to about 110 families, a 57% increase. The service is open 2 days a week, Tuesday and Thursday, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. and provides a friendly drop-in service, as well as home deliveries to those who are less mobile or isolated. The Chief Officer of Be Inspired, Angie Wright, said the food bank was looking for help from as many volunteers as possible, including from people with access to cars and other vehicles that can facilitate home deliveries. Users of the food bank receive membership for between 6 weeks and 6 months, depending on their level of need. They receive food products including tinned goods, meats, vegetables and recipe cards, as well as toiletries and other household essentials. During the festive season, Food Share will provide additional items such as mince pies and seasonal meats, so families and individuals can have a proper Christmas meal, no matter what their circumstances. Angie said, "The food share has become an essential service for many of our neighbours and families. We're a local service, helping people who live in this area. It means we can get to know people and share a real understanding of other support services that might be useful. As the need for our service grows, so does the need for volunteers and funding. While we have lots of food donations, we need money too. It costs us £2,500 a year to keep the service running, as well as volunteers. We can provide training for anyone who would like to join the team, so please do get in touch if you think you could spare even a little time to help. Be Inspired is working with Power to Change, the independent trust that support community businesses across England. A community business is an organisation that is locally rooted and that trades for the benefit of the community. Be Inspired has been awarded up to £1 million of investment through grant and capacity building support for Power to Change over 5 years. The package of support is designed to help transform Braunston into a community business-led economy where people create solutions to tackle some of the most difficult issues. If you can help, call 0116 223 2256 or b-inspired.org.uk.
Police name man killed on anniversary. The driver who died in a collision in Earlshilton after an anniversary night out has been named by police. Ronald James, 32, was in a Green Rover Metro when it collided with a bollard in Wood Street in the centre of the village. Mr. James, from Nuneaton, was pronounced dead at the scene on Saturday, November the 17th. It followed an earlier incident which police are investigating. It is thought Mr. James had got into his car after spotting vandals damaging it. It is claimed he followed them after they left the scene, while his partner remained at the hotel and called the police. A police spokesperson said, "Around 10 minutes before the incident, we were called to a car park in the street following a report of criminal damage to a Green Rover Metro. When officers arrived, the Metro had already left the scene. Following inquiries, two men aged 19 and 32 have been arrested on suspicion of criminal damage and released pending further investigation. A short time after the initial incident, the Metro returned to the area and collided with a street bollard, resulting in the death of the driver. Police say they are keen to speak to anyone who saw the collision or the vehicle involved beforehand. Mr. James's brother has previously told the Mercury, "It looks like he died instantly. It's awful. He and his partner were out celebrating on what should have been a happy night, and it ends like this. He has a 14-year-old stepson, and I have to explain to my four kids that their uncle is gone."
Allow vaping in the workplace. Vaping in the workplace could soon become a reality if a new parliamentary report gets enough support. The All-Party Parliamentary Group for Vaping, APPGV, claim that businesses should cater more for people who vape or use e-cigarettes. This is to tackle what they call misunderstandings about the practice. They believe guidelines for reasonable vaping etiquette should be drawn up and that all outside areas should be available to vapers unless there is a legitimate or professional reason against it. APPGV Chairman Mark Pawsey, Conservative MP for Rugby and Bulkington, said, "It is important to highlight that vaping is not smoking, nor are vapers the same as smokers. Vaping has its own behavioural characteristics and, crucially, it is not subject to legislation prohibiting smoking indoors or in certain locations. Yet, despite there being no legal imperative and guidance existing to the contrary, time and again I see notices or hear announcements in train stations, airports, pubs and restaurants stating that the use of cigarettes and e-cigarettes are prohibited in those areas. Vaping is also routinely banned in workplaces, inside and outside, as well as outside hospitals and near public buildings. One of the main issues we have encountered is the perception that passive or second-hand vaping is harmful to non-vapers, but there is no evidence that this is the case. The report, published earlier this month, suggests Parliament is vital when it comes to introducing new vaping practices. Mr. Pawsey said, "We're not advocating that vaping should be allowed everywhere. Clearly there are times and locations when this would not be appropriate or fair to non-vapers. While there needs to be a balance that does not ignore the rights of non-smokers or non-vapers, it is clear that we need proper workplace and public place policies. Parliament is somewhere that is in a position to set an example to the rest of the country. The New Nicotine Alliance, a charity which aims to promote public health through a greater understanding of new nicotine products, has welcomed the report, recommending more liberal workplace vaping policies." Chairman Sarah Jakes said, "Public vaping bans give the impression that vaping is as harmful as smoking, which is entirely untrue. In fact, vaping is believed to be at least 95% safer, and the government's Stop Smoking campaigns recommend e-cigarettes as a means to quit. It is daft that on the one hand, smokers are being encouraged to vape instead, only to then be told they're banned from vaping just about everywhere. The parliamentary estate becoming vape-friendly would send a strong message to other employers and venue owners that vapers should be encouraged, not harassed, and would help to educate the public that vapers are simply former smokers doing something that is good for their health."
Sailor Ross gets royal recognition for efforts. A sailor from landlocked Leicestershire was among 57 people from across the UK who were recognised for their commitment to supporting grassroots sailing at the Royal Yachting Association's Volunteer Awards. Ross Ryan of Bottisford received an RYA Outstanding Contribution Award from Her Royal Highness the Princess Royal, President of the RYA. The award is for individuals who have made a significant volunteer contribution, either over a period of time or a one-off effort. Having first joined Notts County Sailing Club 10 years ago, Ross has helped the club through a significant transformation and rejuvenation period, which saw it named Britain's Best Sailing Club as the 2018 RYA and Yachts and Yachting Club of the Year in March. The 57-year-old, who was born in the year the club was formed, instigated an ambitious five-year, £250,000 plan to broaden access to sailing by making the club's facilities and activities even more appealing to all, while also being involved in the renegotiation of a new 30-year club lease to enable Notts County to sail for 12 months of the year and inspiring the club's awesome team of volunteers. Following the ceremony, Ross said, "It was a real pleasure to mix with the other volunteers from across the country, sharing our stories of personal and club achievements. It was a fabulous occasion in a great setting, full of mutual respect for great contributors to our sport, with the opportunity to talk about our favourite topics, our sailing exploits, a memory to treasure forever." During the ceremony, Her Royal Highness spoke with each recipient and, in my case, asked how I got into sailing. I explained I was born into a sailing family and that both my mother and father sailed the Finn, a challenging Olympic-class boat. I also mentioned my mother was in the audience. About half an hour later, and after the formal ceremony, we retired to an ante-room and HRH circulated amongst the guests. When she came to my group, with my mother by my side, she immediately inquired about her Finn sailing years back in the 70s and 80s. It was such attention to detail and a warmth that impressed us all. The RYA is boating's national governing body, and the Volunteer Awards are sometimes considered the MBEs of the sport, honouring people throughout the UK for their outstanding contributions across all the disciplines the RYA represents. including sailing, windsurfing, power boating, inland waterways and personal watercraft. The winners were selected by the RYA Honours and Awards panel. On presenting the awards, Her Royal Highness stressed how the volunteers in sailing clubs and class associations across the country should not underplay the difference they make to what can be achieved, and underlined how their commitment makes it more possible for others to enjoy the sport they love themselves. Alistair Dixon, RYA Director of Sport Development, said, "The RYA Volunteer Awards recognise the outstanding contributions made by volunteers nationwide. The ceremony was a fantastic opportunity to say thank you to the people that go above and beyond, giving that little bit extra to ensure others can enjoy the sport we all love. Volunteers really are the lifeblood of boating, and it's an honour to reward their efforts and give something back."
Policing Boss's £100,000 fund in bid to tackle knife crime. Police and Crime Commissioner Lord Willie Back is making £100,000 available to groups that could help combat knife crime in Leicestershire. The Labour peer announced the measure at a conference he, his staff and Crime Stoppers hosted this week to discuss the issues surrounding carrying knives. A number of police and justice experts attended the event at Grace Road's cricket ground on Tuesday, where Lord Back said he would take £100,000 from his office's budget reserves to stem the knife crime epidemic. Non-police organisations, charities, businesses and volunteer groups will be able to bid for a share of the cash over the next 2 years and will receive cash if they can persuade the Commissioner they have worthwhile ideas. Lord Back said he was still angry Leicestershire Police was denied any of the £17.7 million committed by the government to other forces to divert children and young people away from violent crime. He said, "Across the country, knife crime has reached epidemic levels. It poses one of the most serious risks to young people's safety today. It cuts short the opportunities and prospects of young people, preventing them from reaching their full potential. I do not believe that we can arrest our way out of this problem. Tougher sentences and robust policing will certainly help, but it has to start at home. And it has to start early. We have to give young people healthy foundations on which they can build their lives, and that means working with parents, schools and youth workers to manage aggression effectively when it presents itself and give young people positive behaviour strategies to cope with life. I was astonished our recent bid for funding from the Home Office Early Intervention Youth Fund was turned down, alongside all but one of the other East Midlands forces. But while I will continue to fight our corner for more funding, I simply cannot sit back and allow more lives to be maimed. Knife crime will never be solved in a day, but we must start somewhere. That is why I'm launching this new fund." Deputy Chief Constable Rob Nixon said, "Along with our operational activities, educating young people about the dangers of knife crime is among the many important elements of the work we do at Leicestershire Police. We know it can devastate communities, and that's why, through our hashtag LivesNotKnives campaign, we have taken our messages directly into schools and other settings aimed at young people. This includes the message that carrying a knife is not a status symbol and can come with severe penalties. Not only that, but statistically, carrying a knife puts them more at risk of becoming a victim of knife crime themselves. Our recent collaboration with Leicester City Football Club saw us create a film with a selection of footballers appealing to young people to make the right choice and work together as part of a team to keep themselves safe as well as their communities. On top of the new £100,000 fund, Lord Back is paying for 120 police vehicles to be fitted with trauma packs to better equip officers who need to help people with serious injuries. They contain equipment that will improve officers' capacity to offer immediate treatment to casualties."
Police appeal after attacks. Police are appealing for witnesses after a violent attack in a city street which left a teenager in hospital. Officers were called to Paget Road, off Tudor Road, in Blackfriars, Leicester, shortly after 3:30 a.m. on Saturday, where a 19-year-old victim was found with serious injuries. An 18-year-old man who was also found to have been assaulted in the area. At about the same time, officers also received a report of an assault in nearby Warwick Street. A 21-year-old man was injured in this incident. Both the latter two were treated and discharged. Detectives believe the incidents are linked and inquiries are continuing. Detective Sergeant David Spate said, "We are continuing to establish the full circumstances of these incidents and are appealing to anyone who has any information to make contact. If you have any information at all, no matter how insignificant it may seem, then please get in touch with us on 101 or Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111.
Partnership gets £2.4 million to help the rural jobless. A partnership of eight voluntary and public sector organisations have been awarded £2.4 million to tackle unemployment in rural Leicestershire for those most in need. The partnership, led by County Sight Loss Charity Vista, has been awarded the funding from the European Social Fund and Big Lottery Fund through the Building Better Opportunities programme. The Work Live Leicestershire, WILL, partnership will help more than 500 people who are unemployed or economically inactive and living in rural areas of the country move towards job searching, training or employment. After consulting with more than 200 people across the county, the programme will focus on filling gaps in current services, providing access to tailored support and breaking down the barriers to people entering work or learning. Dr. Jamie McCrill, Director of New Opportunities at Vista, said, "We are delighted. The money means we can support people furthest from the jobs market who live in rural Leicestershire by providing holistic support to meet their need. We can also build links across the county with employers to make access to work more inclusive for those people, as well as encourage people to start their own ventures that benefit the community and economy. We have a great partnership with real local knowledge of Leicestershire and will work together to build a better infrastructure in these areas. The programme aims to help people to improve their health and well-being, gain skills and work experience, and have improved confidence, motivation and social engagement. The programme will also work with employers to identify and develop supported employment opportunities and to embrace inclusive recruitment, as well as helping people to start their own enterprises through a business advice programme. The programme will run from January next year to June 2020. James Harcourt of the Big Lottery Fund said, "We're proud to be funding this project, which has put people who will benefit at the heart of designing the programme, so they receive support that is tailored to their needs. Thanks to National Lottery Players and the European Social Fund, people will be provided with the opportunity to learn new skills, helping them move closer to the employment and training." The other organisations involved in the partnership are CASE, De Montfort University, Leicestershire County Council, Prince's Trust, Rural Community Council, Voluntary Action Leicestershire, and Workers Educational Association.
And now we move on to Friday's paper. The headline is, "Young Couple Found Dead in Their Home." Residents of a city street say they were stunned after a couple were found dead in a property. Police have launched an investigation after the man and woman were found inside an address in Tatlow Road, Braunston Frith, shortly up before midnight on Tuesday. The man was aged 31 and the woman was 27. Police and paramedics were called to the property after a member of the public became concerned for the welfare of the occupants. The identities of the man and woman, said locally to have been a couple, have not been released. Police said detectives are not looking for anyone else in connection with the deaths. Initial post-mortem examinations have been carried out but have been proved inconclusive and further tests are to be carried out to determine the cause of their deaths. A number of people who live in the road said they believe the deceased were a couple. One said, "People are saying they were a young couple, but that's all I know. I didn't know them or even whether they lived here together. The suggestion is that they were a youngish couple in their 20s or 30s. It's awful that it doesn't seem to be clear exactly what has happened to these people." Another resident said, "People are horrified and want to know how two people have died together in our neighbourhood." In a statement, police said officers attended along with the East Midlands Ambulance Service and found the bodies of a 31-year-old man and a 27-year-old woman inside the property. A post-mortem examination of the deceased took place yesterday afternoon, Wednesday, and further tests are being conducted. The deaths are being treated as unexplained, and at this stage, police are not looking for anyone else in connection with the incident. A scene preservation that was in place at the address yesterday to allow for specialist officers to carry out inquiries at the scene has been lifted. Formal identification of the deceased were expected to take place last night.
Council hits back over early hours ticketing of badly parked cars. Traffic wardens who have been criticised for handing out tickets in the early hours have been defended by the City Council. A video showing wardens patrolling in the Hartington Road and Vulcan Road area of the city appeared online, and a voice can be heard quizzing the wardens about why they're in the area at 1 a.m. and accuse them of putting tickets on cars to raise cash for the council. But the council has defended the wardens, saying it has a duty to enforce parking restrictions round the clock. The video, which was shared on the Spotted Leicester Facebook page, divided opinion, with some people criticising the council for sending wardens to the area, with others praising them for punishing motorists who have parked up on double yellow lines. The City Council defended its staff and explained that the traffic warden teams work until 1:45 a.m. across the whole city on Friday and Saturday nights, and until midnight on weekdays. It said the wardens dished out just 3 tickets on Saturday morning. The male voice on the video says, "Can you tell me who sent you here at 1 o'clock in the morning to give tickets to residents? I'm sure you came across the article in the Leicester Mercury recently saying that this is an overcrowded area. Is that what you should be doing, really, coming and giving tickets to these people? Are you getting paid double for this? Are you getting paid overtime for working at 1 in the morning? For harassing these people, these hard-working people who are going to wake up in the morning with £30 tickets. That's not nice. It's not nice, and you both know it." The two wardens, a male and a female, ignore the questions throughout the 3-minute clip. A spokesman for the City Council said, "Hartington Road is one of the inner city areas where we receive the highest number of requests for parking enforcement from residents and businesses, who have raised concerns about dangerous parking throughout the day and night. We have recently met with residents on a patch walk of the area around Hartington Road, aimed at looking at where parking restrictions could be relaxed, or where alternative parking could be available, but the opportunities are very limited because these are narrow, densely populated residential streets. Earlier this year, the City Council and Leicestershire Fire and Rescue Service demonstrated the problems faced by fire engine crews by badly parked cars blocking narrow streets in the area, featured in the video." The council spokesman added, "We have a responsibility to enforce the parking restrictions around the clock to ensure streets remain safe, including using evening patrols working until 1:45 a.m. on weekends. There are also high numbers of children living and attending school in Spinney Hills, Highfield, and many of the cars which are parked inconsiderately overnight are likely to still be there the following morning."
Mega Buck. Bespoke high chairs priceless for Pawley Pup. A Pawley pooch, which was struggling to eat, has had an ingenious bespoke high chair created for him by a De Montfort University lecturer. Buck, a 17-month-old Labrador, suffers from a mega esophagus, which means he has a lot of trouble swallowing when he is eating food in the normal way from a dish. Weighing about half what he should, he was in danger of starving to death and was taken in by the team Edward Labrador Rescue charity in Nottingham. The charity's experts concluded he would not live to see his second birthday if nothing was done. A social media post about the desperate situation was seen by University of Nottingham vet and teaching associate Emma Drinkle. She showed it to her fiancé, Nick Rowan, a senior lecturer in product design and engineering at De Montfort University. And between them, they designed and built a high chair, perfectly fitting Buck. The job took them a day, and they had it finished less than 48 hours after they heard about Buck. The chair is designed to be altered as Buck grows, so it should last him for many years. Emma said, "We saw Buck's story on social media and I knew we had to do something if he was going to have a chance. Luckily, Nick and I have the combined expertise and experience to build the chair quickly. There is no surgery available for the dogs with this condition, and as Buck was already receiving the medications that can help, the one other thing that could help him keep his food down was gravity. Being upright while feeding helps the food drip to his stomach." Nick said, "I'm so pleased with how it fits, how comfortably he sits in it, and how happy he is to be fed like this. He's the same width in his shoulders as our own 5 kilogram Jack Russell, so without meeting Buck, we had to double check his measurements during the build. It just didn't seem right for a big dog like a Labrador." Laura Pearce from the Lawrence Veterinary Centre in Eastwood, Nottinghamshire, who has been Buck's vet since he was rescued by the charity, said, "I'm surprised Buck has lived as long as he has with this condition. His esophagus is abnormal in that it's enlarged and has lost its tube-like state that pushes food through to the stomach. It means little of the food he eats makes it into his stomach for digestion. Most get stuck in pouches in the esophagus or is regurgitated." Wendy Hopewell of Team Edward in Nottingham said, "It was the most fabulous sight to see Buck eating in the chair and happy to be in it. To see how he sat in it straight away and got stuck in was incredible. It just pulls at your heartstrings. Buck, who has a foster family, has not regurgitated food since using the chair and is on a high-calorie puppy diet to help him put on weight."
University and Council Summit on Loneliness. A summit on tackling loneliness and social isolation in Leicestershire was being held today. The talks at the University of Leicester were to provide the opportunity to learn, share good practice, and encourage agencies to work together to provide effective solutions to the issue. The event was due to see the County Council and the University of Leicester's Unit for Diversity, Inclusion and Community Engagement, DICE, bring together interested parties in the public, voluntary, business and education sectors to better understand the impact of loneliness. County Councillor Pam Posnett, who was opening the summit, said, "There is increasing evidence that loneliness impacts health, well-being and independence. It's vital we play our part in raising awareness of this issue. It's also important that we have an occasion where our partners and ourselves can share our experiences, our thoughts, and build the bonds between us so we can work together even better than we do and make a difference to those in need." Associate Professor John Williams, co-director of DICE, said, "We're delighted to host this event with Leicestershire County Council. The Joe Cox Commission talked recently about levels of loneliness across all age ranges that are worryingly high. This includes some students at university, which for some is a major life change. The question is, could this be the sign of a growing problem in different age groups in an increasingly atomised world? Or does it suggest that we have much more awareness today about the damage caused by loneliness and are more willing as a society to talk openly about such issues? We hope to address these matters in our conference." The summit is part of the Council's new initiative to work with others to help residents become better connected and improve lives and reduce the demand on public services. Examples of how the Council and its partners already tackle loneliness include social workers supporting vulnerable children, adults and families, emergency services providing joined-up advice, for instance, on trips and falls, fire safety and home security to keep people safe and living independently, and the council's network of local area coordinators who connect and support people in communities.
Petrol and threat left outside home. A criminal left a jerry can of fuel, a cigarette lighter, and a note that said "final warning" outside the home of a financial advisor. Some advice had led to a falling out between the man and one of his clients. Christopher Priddy was paid £500 to put the items outside the advisor's home in Leicester. He claimed he had no idea the man was a financial advisor and assumed the disagreement was between drug dealers and would not be reported to the police. On July the 23rd, 2016, the victim's wife found the jerry can outside their Leicester home. Police were called and the note, a full 5-litre jerry can of petrol and the lighter were found to have either DNA or fingerprints linking them to Priddy, 36, who had previous convictions for burglary and drug offences. However, it was only in October this year, over 2 years later, that Priddy was finally arrested and charged. He pleaded guilty to threatening to commit criminal damage and was sentenced at Leicester Crown Court. Nadim Holland, representing Priddy, told the court, "Someone from his past approached him and he was offered £500. He was very short of money and he agreed to do this. He was led to believe it was some dispute that would never attract the attention of the authorities, something like a drugs dispute." Mr. Holland said his client's life had moved on in the years since the incident and that he was now working for a food wholesaler in Lancashire, earning £28,000 a year and regularly seeing his young son and daughter. Mr. Holland said, "Until this came to light, he was hoping for another promotion at work." The court heard Priddy had never been to prison and that his last conviction was in 2007. Judge Nicholas Dean agreed he could give Priddy, who now lives in Keswick Road, Blackpool, a suspended sentence. He told Priddy, "You are responsible for placing a jerry can full of fuel, a lighter and a note with words 'final warning' outside a home. There were people who had some sort of grudge against him concerning advice he had given in his capacity as a financial advisor. The effect on him and his family is most concerning. To be threatened with having your house burnt down when your family and children are in the house must be very worrying indeed. You must have been desperate to accept £500 to carry out this very threatening act. It's very difficult to know why this case has taken so long to get to court, but I'm told your life is now very different. You've obtained work and are doing very well in your work." He gave Priddy a 15-month sentence, suspended for 2 years, and ordered him to pay £500 in costs, £1,500 compensation to the financial advisor, and to do 120 hours of unpaid work.
Homeless service to be scrapped and replaced. An outreach support service for homeless people is to be scrapped and replaced with a redesigned model. The existing floating support element of the homelessness and housing support model costs Leicestershire County Council £320,000 per year. The new model will see specially trained staff working with the existing Local Area Coordination Service, LAC, which supports vulnerable people across the county. Documents detailing the model said it would enable the development of a consistent Leicestershire-wide approach to preventing homelessness. Cabinet members approved a consultation about the proposed changes at a meeting on Friday. The consultation will run between January and April, with the results being discussed by councillors sometime in the spring. Councillor Pam Posnett, lead member for Health, said, "Although district councils have responsibility for housing, we have a responsibility for their health. I think the redesign will work extremely well for people and the council." LACs are staffed by a team of coordinators who work with members of the public who are experiencing a range of issues. Councillor Terry Anan, leader of the Labour group at County Hall, said, "I've seen firsthand the work that LACs do, and they've been very successful in my area. They support the most vulnerable people, and I hope that success can be replicated if it's decided we take that approach when it comes to housing and homelessness. Quite often, when we're talking about people facing homelessness and housing issues, there are other underlying problems. Working with LACs will hopefully mean homelessness is prevented, but people receive support for other issues as well. The in-reach housing support element of the model, which supports the Falcon Centre Homeless Hostel in Loughborough, will remain as it is. The 30-bed hostel provides emergency support for homeless single people and couples over the age of 18. The provision costs £180,000.
Mum furious as girl excluded for throwing Haribo at deputy head. A teenage girl was excluded from school and accused of assault after she threw a sweet at a teacher during a charity fun day, her mum claims. Sue Freeman, 52, said her daughter Katie, 13, was accused of assaulting an adult when she chucked the gummy bear at her deputy head. Students had been allowed to throw wet sponges at teachers to raise cash for children in need on November the 16th. But Year 9 student Katie threw a single Haribo gummy bear at the deputy head. Sue said he was not injured, but staff did not see the funny side, putting her daughter into isolation before excluding her and banning her from taking part in a school trip. Mum of two, Sue of Newbold Burden, said, "I'm so angry. I want people to know how petty our education system has got." The principal of Market Bosworth School wrote to Katie's parents explaining that she was being excluded for assaulting an adult, which will be kept on her permanent record. Sue said Katie has now been told she will not be allowed to attend an £850 school ski trip to Italy, which the family had already paid for. "She's absolutely gutted about it," Sue said. "The school have said they'll get the money back to us, but the family has already spent hundreds of pounds on ski gear for her. It was going to be a Christmas present." The gummy bear reportedly hit the deputy head in the chest during the fun charity event, sparking an investigation into which child threw it. Sue said Katie was put into isolation for the Friday and the following Monday excluded Tuesday, and she has to attend weekly meetings about her behaviour and attitude. In a letter home to Katie's parents, school principal Stuart Wilson said she was being suspended for physical assault against an adult. "The decision to exclude Katie has not been taken lightly," the letter said. Sue said she believed the school has overreacted. She said Katie has never had a bad report. "I've never been called in before because of her behaviour. I'm absolutely disgusted." A spokesman for the school said it did not comment on individual cases.
Stretch of main road to be shut overnight. A short section of the A50 will be shut overnight during the first half of December. The work is taking place on the westbound side only, along a stretch just to the east of the M1 junction near Markfield. The closure will take place between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. each night, beginning on the evening of Monday, December the 3rd, and continuing until Friday, December the 14th. The closure has been agreed by Leicestershire County Council Highways in order for work to take place on a bridge that crosses the road. A very short diversion will see vehicles taking the exit for Shepshed, crossing over Whittick Road and then getting onto the slip road to rejoin the A50 a few hundred yards after they exited. The County Council said, "Leicestershire County Council apologises for any inconvenience caused during this work." Billabarra Lane, Markfield, is to be closed at the junction with Shaw Lane and a sideline on February 18th and 19th. The temporary traffic regulation order approved by Leicestershire County Council will be implemented for public safety for Openreach to restore the services. Hobie Road, Brookside, will be closed either side of the level crossings from 9:30 p.m. on December the 2nd to 5:30 a.m. the following day. This will safely allow Network Rail to safely undertake work to its level crossing.
If you suspect drink or drug driving, call police. Police have urged members of the public to help them track down drunk or drug-impaired drivers. Officers want people to take a note of suspects' registration plates and direction of travel and to contact the force to pass the information to the police. The force issued the message when it launched its annual month-long Christmas campaign. It said suspects would be stopped and tested for alcohol or drugs across the city and county at all times of the day, early in the morning, at lunchtime, or during the evening. Since 2015, officers have been carrying drug testing kits, which enable them to identify motorists who are under the influence of substances such as cannabis or cocaine. Chief Inspector Tom Thompson, who is heading up the campaign across Leicestershire, Northamptonshire and Lincolnshire, said driving while impaired, whether through drink or drugs, devastates lives. Sadly, each year, drink and drugs are a contributory factor in death and serious injury on the UK's roads. Improved detection methods and a change in the law introduced 3 years ago have seen a rise on the number of drug drive arrests. Drivers should be aware we patrol 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to challenge drink drug drivers and bring them before the courts. In December 2017, officers made 78 drink driving arrests and 21 for drug driving. About a third of the offenders were 25 or under. 35 of the arrests followed a crash. Police advise drivers to plan ahead by leaving the car at home, sharing a taxi, or taking public transport, or designating someone who is fit to drive.
And now for some stories from Saturday's paper. Body found in search for missing father. A body, believed to be that of missing father of two, Paresh Patel, has been found in Abbey Park. Police divers were seen combing the water at the park yesterday morning, and they confirmed shortly after that a body of a man they believed to be Paresh had been found. His family have been informed. The 48-year-old was last seen at 9 p.m. on Saturday, November the 10th, walking along Belgrave Road close to the park. His disappearance was described as out of character, and this, coupled with him not having his medicine with him, prompted a widespread search. Checks have already been carried out in the park. A police spokeswoman said, "Officers searching for a missing Leicester man have discovered a body. The body was found in the canal within Abbey Park, Leicester, shortly before 10 a.m. this morning, Friday. Formal identification is yet to take place, but the body is believed to be that of Paresh Patel. A post-mortem examination will be carried out to establish the circumstances surrounding the death. Photographer Peter Fothergill went to Abbey Park after reports of a huge police presence. He said, "The police have got the area all roped off. There's a big orange tent by the canal. The cordon goes right from the main road all the way down past the lock, the section between the two bridges. It's hard to get down to the river there. There's lots of police keeping the area secure. There's a lot of interest as you can see it from the main road. Some cars have been stopping or slowing down to look. It's causing some tailbacks." In the wake of his disappearance, Paresh's wife, Kalpana, put out a video asking Paresh to come home. She said, "Everyone is so worried about you. Our boys have been asking about you, trying to text you and ring you. Your mum has constantly been crying. I don't know what to tell her to make her feel better." Sons, Kian, 12, and 9-year-old Harshal, led a walk, retracing the steps of their father, while carrying a banner with "Come Home, Daddy" on it. They were joined by about 500 people from the area. The group walked slowly and quietly along Belgrave Road and tied the banner to the fence surrounding the statue on the road. At the walk, the Patel family released a statement thanking all those who attended.
Village brothers who died in war commemorated with streets named after them. Soldiers from a village who made the ultimate sacrifice during the First World War have been honoured by having streets named after them. Brothers Harold and Thomas Stacy, and Frank and Fred Harris are commemorated on a development being built by William Davis Holmes in Houghton-on-the-Hill, where they once lived. It was decided to name the streets using names from the Village War Memorial, street signs for Stacy Avenue and Harris Drive, emblazoned with a poppy motif to show their significance, were officially unveiled this week by Harborough District Council Chairman Leslie Bowles and representatives of William Davis Holmes. Councillor Bowles said, "This is a lovely tribute to those local soldiers who fought and died for their country. It will ensure the sacrifice these heroes gave is remembered now and by future generations." David Dodge, Development Director at William Davis Holmes, said, "It's an honour and highly appropriate to mark the anniversary of the First World War with the acknowledgement of the contribution of these local men. Dedicating these new roads to their memory provides a tangible link between villagers of the past and the new families coming to live here. We're very proud to be part of that." Working with developers over the coming weeks, the council is set to unveil more new street names dedicated to Great War soldiers, as well as female pioneers and women who campaigned for universal suffrage. The initiative is part of Harborough District Council commemorations marking 100 years since the end of the First World War and the Representation of the People Act, under which, for the first time, some women gained the right to vote.
Grade pair posed as police to rob family. Robbers posing as police officers took £2,000 in cash and a quantity of valuable jewellery after threatening a family with a screwdriver. The family first spotted the two men in the back garden of their home in Bates Close, just off Maxwell Drive in Loughborough. At first, the men claimed to be police officers, but when they got nearer, one of them pulled out a screwdriver and they demanded to be let into the home. They then helped themselves to the cash and a large amount of jewellery during the robbery, which happened shortly before 7 p.m. on Tuesday, November the 20th. Police have released an image showing various items of jewellery that were taken in the hope that someone recognises them. The men, who are believed to have been speaking to each other in an East European language, also took the keys to a BMW that was not at the address and left on foot without anyone being injured. Leicestershire police said the man who was holding the screwdriver was described as white, about 5'8", of large build, with an Eastern European accent. He was wearing a grey hat, grey jumper and grey gloves, with a dark mask covering his face. The investigating officer, Detective Constable Gemma Dempsey, said, "This ordeal was incredibly frightening for the family. They were threatened in their own home and had to stand by while two men stole from them. What is also worrying for us is these two men intentionally pretended to be police officers, so we urgently want to catch them before they use this as a tactic to target other people. If you were around the Bates Close area of Loughborough at the time of the burglary and saw anything or have seen the jewellery in the photo for sale, please make contact. Information you have could help with our inquiries. Anyone with any information is asked to contact the police on 101.
Heartbroken dad calls for initiation students to be forced to leave. The father of a Leicester man who died after attending a university initiation says students involved in such ceremonies should be forced to leave the university. Jeremy Farmer, the father of Ed Farmer, who died from excessive drinking, spoke out in an interview on BBC Radio 4's Today's programme on Thursday, November the 29th. A coroner ruled in October that Ed died due to the toxic effects of an excessive amount of alcohol in a short period of time, aged 20, in December 2016. He suffered a fatal brain injury after going into cardiac arrest. He told how Ed, an economics student at Newcastle University, who attended schools in Tugby, Stony Stanton and Oakham, had fallen ill after a night out with friends as part of an initiation event for the university's agricultural society. He said he was involved in an initiation. It was nothing to do with freshers. It is a tradition, a 40-year-old tradition. But from our perspective, in the cold light of day, it seems a fairly pointless practice. He said the family wanted to raise awareness of the risks of initiations and coercive drinking, and explained that Ed would not normally drink spirits, and he certainly wouldn't drink that volume of his own volition. Mr. Farmer of Leicester described how police officers turned up at his home to tell him his son was severely ill at the Royal Victoria Infirmary, RVI. And the difficult decision they made to turn off his life support machine. With one son in Australia and the other one in Newcastle, you go down and open the door, and the name you hear, it'll be one of them in pretty serious trouble, he added. When we got up to the RVI, they did say he was in a very serious state. They had done a brain scan and the brain was dead. Our reaction was, well, in that case, turn him off. There is no point in keeping him alive. When asked about the reaction he got from the university and students' union, he said, "Our first contact with the university would have been with the student welfare officer, and she was brilliant. There's not a lot they can say apart from trying to help you gather his stuff together, and that is it, really. The first contact we had with the student union was when the chief executive came down to see us. But I think really it is from their perspective damage limitation until the conclusion of the inquest. They are always going to be on the defensive." When asked where he thought responsibility lay following the inquest, he said, "Nobody has admitted responsibility. We certainly don't blame the students who are part of the initiation process. We don't ultimately blame the university. It's just a lack of understanding on the university's part of the problem that they had got, and I think it's been quite a shock to them to understand the seriousness of the problem. It was said Universities UK was looking into the problem and had a working group which Newcastle University was cooperating with." Mr. Farmer also said students should be informed about the dangers of binge drinking. As to initiations, they are all banned at universities across the country, he added. It's just they weren't implementing the ban. We are of the opinion that draw a line in the sand so that from here on in, everybody knows initiations are banned. And if you step over that line, you'll be removed from university. In October, recording a narrative conclusion, Karen Dilks said Ed's death was in part because the risks of doing so were not known. She added that there was clear evidence the other students at the event were unaware of the inherent risks of excessive alcohol consumption.
And now for a selection of letters. John Toon of Littlethorpe writes, "Countryside is under siege from criminals. You folks in town might think you have a big problem with criminality, but how about the countryside? Do you realise what problems people in the country have, particularly farmers? They're under siege, under constant attack from thieves who not only rob them but also do much damage in the process. Even if farmers have video evidence, have machines with trackers which allow police to trace these individuals and catch them red-handed with caches of stolen property, they claim they're unable to take action for lack of evidence. All the thieves need to do is claim that they do not know anything about it. The owner of the stolen property is then presented with a bill to regain his property from the police compound. You couldn't make it up. Anyway, the victim may be threatened with repercussions if he takes any action against the perpetrators, i.e. by further damage to his farm by them. Serious consequences, of course, will ensue from the law if the victim takes any vengeful action. If you go around the countryside at all, you may notice the profusion of security gates at farm entrances. This doesn't stop the villains, though. It's disgusting."
Do those on rich lists think about the poor? A letter from Phil Dews of Leicester. Recently, the Mercury published in the Business Monthly the rich list. Some of these people are worth millions or billions. I wonder if any of them think about people struggling to make ends meet and the poverty of people living on the streets. There are charities crying out for money in this country which deserve financial help. I'm sure the rich don't need all their wealth. I was born into a poor family and told that having somewhere to live and food and out of debt by my parents was sufficient. King Solomon in the Bible declared that all riches were vanity. A friend I once knew, who was a grave digger, once buried a multimillionaire and declared to me that this man was the richest man in the cemetery. You can't take it with you, so do good to someone while you are alive.
Wilf Doe of Nottingham writes, Americans can keep their Black Fridays. Why do idiots in various businesses have to copy the USA and have sales called Black Friday? We now have to suffer not only Black Friday, but Black Weekends, Black Weeks, etc. We will no doubt soon have other colours thrown at us from the dopey Yanks. Will they soon have an alternative to a white Christmas called Black Christmas?
Ban for fan necessary, or next time it'll be 20, from Harry Johnson of Leicester. The ban for the fan who jumped the barrier at the King Power Stadium to hug Top is necessary, banned Mercury, November the 17th. I've supported them for 80 years. If you let one off, it will be 20 next time, and just build up. I felt emotional, so did the other 30,000. It's a slap on the wrist. If the rules were fully applied, it could have been a season ban, so don't put the blame on the club.
Terry Kirby of Barwell writes, cheaper fares might not boost bus usage. Max Lewis is right. Our local bus services are very badly served by technology. Mailbox, November 22nd. The Travel Line East Midlands website has always given weird predictions. Once on checking the details of a bus journey from Barwell to Loughborough, I was told to catch a stagecoach bus and change at Golf Course Lane to an Arriva service due 1 minute after the stagecoach bus, then change again at St Margaret's bus station to a Kinch bus Skylink service. Three different operators. No information on fares was provided, and two changes of bus, one of them completely unnecessary, left me distinctly unimpressed. This seems to be due to the way in which the system collects data from the relevant operators and simply repeats it parrot fashion. And, like Mags, I found some of the bus stop names quoted weird. I've been directed to Leicester Square, London, more than once when trying to find Leicester. The Choose My website, much vaunted by the city and county councils, isn't much better, either relying on Travelline for some of its data. We do need the political will, energy, leadership and attention to detail to help people make the right choices. Sadly, there's not enough evidence of that in the UK as a whole, and certainly not in Leicester and Leicestershire. High fares are another issue, but bus operators are facing some real challenges financially, so their main concern in the first instance, understandably, is remaining commercially viable. If fares could be lowered, how could we guarantee getting the required extra fare-paying passengers on board buses? This would need a carrot-and-stick approach, which is too detailed to go into here, but can be looked into at the appropriate time.
Elderly are suffering from fear of crime. Letter with name and address supplied. Speaking with a large group of elderly people with whom I lunched, along with my 82-year-old mother, the subject turned to crime, or rather, the fear of it. According to what I heard from them, I am mortified, upset, and very angry. My mother's home is very secure. However, at night, she barricades herself in her bedroom with a bowl in case the necessity of life calls. She has alarms throughout the house, cameras, spotlights, and a 6-foot fence with a trellis on top, yet she still quivers in her bed at night. This story and similar ones were not uncommon. Pretty much everyone agreed they would not leave the house after dark, or if it meant returning home to an empty house alone. Most no longer even go into the city centre in the daytime. All but one were terrified in their own beds at night, and my heart still feels like it is made of lead from what I heard. These pensioners are mostly not actually suffering from crime. They are suffering from the fear of the very real crimes happening around them. They are afraid of the very real violence and they are seeing on TV, reading about and hearing about from other pensioners. Most of them have neighbours who have been burgled or suffered from crime in some way. I do not know what the answers are, but one part of the problem is a lack of police officers. Several of the old people told me the police are not present in the areas after dark, and I must agree. I never see a police officer on patrol in the evening, and there is no shortage of antisocial behaviour which could be prevented by police on patrol. I would be interested to hear from the Chief Constable and some of our council leaders about this matter, and I intend to take the matter to the Crown, as the Westminster politicians seem to care not one jot.
D.A. Cookson of Groby writes, "How transport policy has gone off the rails. One of the reasons for the demise of the high street shops is the building of new houses and warehouses in the countryside away from the city. Lots of new housing has no local bus services to the city to make people leave their cars at home. The cost of parking and fuel puts people off when they can go shopping out of town at Foss Park or Beaumont Leys and other retail parks for free. At weekends, they're packed, and there are huge traffic jams which cause more pollution. Also, the days of large companies based in the city employing hundreds of staff have gone. They would have gone shopping after work or lunchtime. Fewer people in the city has also affected our lovely market, which is unique and has suffered from stalls being empty. There are empty buildings, such as the Centre Hotel, the Palais and Frog Island, which could be used for living accommodation. We hear of new jobs with companies based outside Leicester offering new work. All the warehouses are being built for goods that are imported, as we are not manufacturing goods to export from these warehouses. They're built to deal with online shopping, which means that people do not have to travel to the city as they order goods on the internet and have their food and parcels delivered by road, rather than collecting the items from a store. They're all served by road, rather than rail. Prime examples are Barden Industrial Park and Magna Park, both of which cover a very large area of the countryside which has traffic all the while. There is a railway line which runs from Leicester to Colville and on to Burton, but is only served by roadstone trains. Nearby at Magna Park are the A5 and M1. There has never been any inclusion of a rail hub to take traffic off the roads and put it on the railway. New plans for East Midlands Gateway, with massive warehousing, will add more traffic to the M1 and M42 roads, as I shall be surprised to see much travelling out by rail. A new ring road in the city would only take traffic from one place to another, adding to traffic snarl-ups as well as pollution, which is now at a record level. It is all right talking about it, but we need action for future generations."
Long, frustrating haul to hospital car park. Earlier this week, I had an 11:15 a.m. appointment at the Leicester Royal Infirmary. I left home at 10:25 a.m. and got as far as the top of Welford Road, where the traffic was at a standstill as far down as the prison. Very slowly we moved on until once again we were stationary. So I went into the middle lane to cut round and go up to the lights past the Tigers Ground, where, once again, we were stationary, completely gridlocked in all directions. We eventually got onto Aylston Road and up to the lights at Jarram Street, where, once again, stationary, all the way down to Havelock Street, where traffic was also stationary. At this point, it was 11:13 a.m, so I rang the infirmary department and told them I would be late. I eventually got into the car park, where you were only allowed in when a car came out. I eventually wound my way round to the hospital's new multi-storey car park, where there were plenty of parking spaces, but this route is the only way of getting into it. I then realised that the barrier is controlled from the outside car park, that you have to drive through to get to the multi-storey one, and that is why there's always a huge traffic jam along Havelock Street, despite there being plenty of spaces. You would have thought the system would have been changed to include the new multi-storey car park, or would that be too difficult to do? I eventually arrived at 11:58 a.m, and that's from G. Allen of Rothley.
We have now reached the end of the Leicester Mercury Talking newspaper. If you wish to contact the Sound Services Department of Vista, please telephone the Vista helpline on 0116 249 8839. And it's goodbye from Bev.
And goodbye from Sally.